this question came in from several people, but especially Tony and Gabe. David, how should you plan if you and your family are separated during a riot, such as like your wife works across town, the kids are in school, whatever? You know, maybe an EMP may have cut off communication, or cell lines will be jammed. How can you communicate and reunite your family so that everyone reaches safety?
That's a great question. And there's no one answer to this because it's so easy to keep throwing in what-ifs until you're blue in the face. So, again, it's important to focus on fundamentals. Let's just take a real basic example, and that's a local disaster. One of the things that happens pretty quickly after a local disaster is that cell phone lines get jammed and local circuits get jammed. So one of the things that's important is to keep a list of memorized numbers in your head of people who live in a different area code than you, so that you and the rest of your family can call them and relay messages back and forth if you aren't able to call each other directly. And it sounds crazy, but it happens. Another thing is having primary, secondary, and even tertiary meetup points in the event of a disaster. In addition, I practice making pace routes from wherever I happen to be to these meetup points. And PACE is a great mnemonic to remember, and it stands for primary, alternate, contingent, and emergency. And I use this, or I learned it from a private contractor friend of mine, and I've used it for close protection. And basically, it means that you should have multiple loosely defined yet clear points in your mind for how you're going to get from where you are to each of your rally points. And the emergency option is the only one that's different. For me, the emergency route is to somewhere that I can hole up and gather myself and possibly resupply or even take care of medical issues. So what I'll do is I'm just going about my business and I happen to be stopped at a stoplight. I'll ask myself, if X happened, what would my pace routes be to get to our three meetup points? And you can do the quick math and see that four routes to three locations means I'm coming up with 12 routes. But once you train your brain to think this way, it's really amazing how quick it is. It's you don't have to get incredibly detailed, and especially if you're in your home city, you'll find that the routes, you'll keep hitting the same routes no matter where you are. There's going to be some main routes that you use no matter where you're coming from or going to. Now, things get really complicated when you throw children into the mix who can't take the initiative and need outside help. So if your children go to school, the first thing you need to do is find out what your school's plan is in the event of a terrorist attack or natural disaster. And that's the way I'd phrase it, because those are things that are in everybody's vocabulary, and you don't need to say EMP or anything that you might have to educate someone on. Just keep it simple. So some of the questions that you'll need to get answers to is, will they go into lockdown when something happens? And if they are in lockdown, is there any way that they'll release your child to you, or are they just in lockdown? It's unlikely, but will the school monitor any radio frequencies? If not, and their school uses radios, can you find out or figure out the frequency that they operate on? If you know another set of parents near the school, what do you need to do right now to authorize them to take your kids to their house? And if these friends are set up to take your kids, what will be their signal that they should take your kids? Because you kind of want to avoid a situation where something bad happens, you get to school, and you can't find your kids, and the school doesn't know where your kids are. And it's all because your friends took your kids because that's what they thought they were supposed to do. And the other thing is, how are you going to communicate with them? So if this is a concern for you, these are all things you need to consider. And this isn't far-fetched or way out planning by any means. And I'll just give you an example. And it was normal for me growing up. I grew up in blizzard country, and getting trapped at school was a real issue for us. Every kid who lived in the country had to have one or more people in town who they could be released to in the event of road closures. And they happened. It was just something that got handled the first week of school every year. It was no big drama. And when the blizzards happened, and they did happen, and when it was impossible for our parents to get to us to pick us up, we just went to our backup location in town. So what about other solutions you might want to look into for communication? Well, it depends on your city and how far separated you are from the people you need to talk to. And I go into a lot more depth on this in the course, but some of your options are just simple family radios, which they were really a staple after Katrina, when all the repeaters and 911 stations and everything else happened, that just communication was horrible down there. A few other options are HF radios, single sideband radios, and possibly satellite phones. But I kind of shy away from satellite phones for several reasons, price included in there. And this is something that doesn't have a one-size-fits-all answer. But keep in mind that until 10 to 15 years ago, people didn't have cell phones on their hips. And it took hours or days to get in touch with people. And we've just gotten really, really used to having instant access to everyone that we want to talk to. And it's okay to not have instant access. So in the event of an emergency, that's pretty much going to be a given. There's going to be delays of hours or possibly days to get in touch with people in your own town. So it's definitely something that you want to figure out, a solution that you're comfortable with for your family.
Okay. Keith, John, and Errol had a great question. David, what's the best way to redirect potential thieves and looters from your property during social unrest? For example, let's say you have livestock or a garden. It's eventually going to be an open invitation to hungry neighbors. Is there anything that can be done to make yourself less of a target?
Yeah, that's another great question. And I'll cover the urban situation first of not making yourself look like a target. Even if you don't have livestock or a big garden. And in short, what you want to do is make sure that your neighbors look like better targets than you do. It's not a matter of not being hit ever. It's a matter of being hit last. It's kind of like when you go out into the woods in bear country, you always want to make sure that you have someone who's slower than you along so that if a bear attacks, you can get away. But just a few tips on this. If you buy expensive products, try and cut up the packaging into small pieces, and you might even want to consider disposing the packaging away from your house at a commercial dumpster or at your office even. Also, look at your house as if you were a thief. Do you have a big screen TV, a gun case, or any other valuables in plain sight through your window? Basically stuff that is going to see and say, hey, I can just smash and grab that and be gone and pawn it and have some money to get some drugs. And if you do, just move the items so they're not so easily visible. If you have an alarm system, make sure you have signs advertising the fact that you have an alarm. And then use your alarm. And this won't stop a truly determined home invader, but the chances of having a truly determined home invader that's targeting you specifically is much, much less than just a random home invasion. But it will give you a few seconds of advance warning. And if you don't have an alarm, consider getting one or at least getting alarm stickers. Now, while you're outside of your house looking at it through the eyes of a thief, see if you can see any places to hide, either because of bushes or because of shadows. And one of the most basic things that you can do is add lighting with motion sensors on the approaches to your house. And also consider clearing out the bushes that provide concealment or replacing them with roses or other thorny bushes. And the next thing is to look at your doors. And the big thing here is, do they look secure? Again, what we're trying to do is get it so that your house isn't targeted, somebody else's is. So you want your doors to at least look secure. They should be secure as well, but the first line of defense is that they look secure. And is the bolt lock a high-end one, or is it obviously the $12 special from Home Depot that you can basically hit with anything and it'll break? If you find yourself in an urban survival situation, you not only want to look like a bad target from the outside, you're probably going to want to go one step further and make sure you don't like a target to people who are inside your house. And you can accomplish this by separating and hiding as much of your survival provisions as possible, so that if worse comes to worse, you can actually let people in your house and show them that you don't have much food or supplies worth stealing. Now, granted, this will be much harder with generators, solar panels, deep cycle battery arrays, and other items, but the principle of hiding everything that you can holds true. And I don't know if I told you this or not, I'm going to be releasing a book on caching this year that provides a step-by-step roadmap for handling these exact situations. And the author wants to remain anonymous, and I'm simply publishing it for him, but I can tell you it's a pretty incredible project. So the second question on chickens and gardens and rural settings, that's a great one too. And I know a lot of people who, with their chickens or rabbits, they have a contingency plan to move them inside and actually into their basement if things get too unstable and they're not comfortable with leaving them outside. That's not a great solution. Just odor is one major consideration, but it is an option. And on the garden, there's a few options, but none of them are incredibly easy. Probably the easiest one would be adding a skylight to your garage or attic and switching over to a hydroponic or aeroponic garden. And basically that means that you stop using soil to grow your vegetables. And that way, people may or may not see the skylight from the outside, but they don't know what's inside. Another would be to surround your garden with weeds to disguise it. And a third is to just make sure that you don't plant things that stand out in the open. And here's an example. Carrots blend in with green weeds because the orange part of the plant is underground where you don't see it. But tomatoes, they stick out from quite a ways away because the red is above ground. So if you can plant vegetables and fruits that blend in like that, you'll be much less likely to get hit. And on that topic, though, it's important to keep in mind that it's very difficult to grow enough food to provide all the calories that you need if you're only gardening part-time. It's fun, and you get better food. But between the number of calories that you'll need, the time it takes to maintain your garden, protect the garden, and the potential shortages of water, fertilizer, pesticides, and herbicides, it's kind of a 50-50 bet at best whether or not you'll get enough food to survive or just end up wasting a lot of time trying. You can get knocked out by any of those things. You can get knocked out by not enough water. You can get knocked out by bugs. You can get knocked out by all sorts of nasty stuff. And a better approach might be to switch over to medical herbs that are low maintenance and native vegetables that grow easily and have low water requirements and blend in and don't look like food to passerbys. So this brings up another good point, and that's that even if you have chickens, a garden, and a rural location, you still need to have a good supply of food in the event of a breakdown in civil order. It's just, I mean, even without having to defend against looters and thieves, chickens get sick, predators get hungry, bugs come out, hail happens, deer and rabbit and other animals eat stuff that you don't want them to, and sometimes gardens just don't grow the way you expect them to, or like they have in past seasons. Now, one of the best things about these two questions was that both people asked how to misdirect thieves and looters instead of how to make an impenetrable fortress. And it's important to approach it from that angle because U.S. houses just aren't made to withstand a determined attack. A smart attacker isn't going to screw around with your doors and windows. If they want you, they'll just launch Molotov cocktails at your neighbor's house and smoke you out. And if they want your stuff, all they have to do is drive a truck through one of your exterior walls and use smoke, gas grenades, or just simply mix chlorine and ammonia to take care of you. And both of these people were spot on that a much, much better approach is to do whatever you can to stay invisible. And that's one of the points that I just hit repeatedly in the Survive in Place course.